The recently released Pandora Papers show how some of the world's wealthiest people hide their assets from governments, taxes, and other obligations. The findings come from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, who obtained millions of documents that show the inner workings of the secretive process. The records show that U.S. states like South Dakota played a crucial role in aiding that murky process through the use of legal trusts. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following this story of these Pandora Papers? What do you think? Do you think there needs to be more oversight of trusts in the U.S.? Do you have a question about how all this works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Debbie Senzipur is an author and Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter at The Washington Post. She's part of the team who covered the Pandora Papers for The Post. She's also an associate professor and director of the Medill Investigation Lab at Northwestern's Medill School of Journalism. Debbie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
A key to this whole conversation, I want to get it out right up front, this concept of the trust. It's an old financial thing, but it's getting used in kind of a different way here. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, for sure. So generations of Americans, or generations of families really all over the world, have managed their wealth through trust. It's perfectly legal. There's nothing unusual about it. There's nothing unusual for trust companies to set up trusts to help families, you know, pass down their wealth in ways that they consider to be appropriate. What we didn't know, though many financial crime experts suspected, is that the trusts are also potentially being abused here in the U.S. by people outside the United States who are moving assets and money here that were acquired in suspicious ways. People who acquired their wealth amid very credible allegations of criminal behavior, wrongdoing, human rights abuses, labor exploitation, and other things in some of the world's most vulnerable communities.
And now we have these showing up, these international leaders, very wealthy people, parking their money in trusts in places like South Dakota, Alaska, Nevada, Delaware, and I think one more. What is it about those states? What did they change in their laws that's making them havens for these kind of trusts?
Yeah, havens is a great way of describing it. You know, we would never have expected Sioux Falls, South Dakota to be potential, you know, this global destination for foreign wealth. But, you know, the trust industry there really is, you know, a leader in the world. And they became that way. They were able to draw foreign wealth because the lawmakers in South Dakota over many years passed a series of customer-friendly laws that basically gave the trust industry an upper hand to draw clients from all over the world. And these laws did a couple of key things. First of all, they protected the assets of trusts from creditors. And I think one of the biggest things they did is they provided incredible secrecy to clients. Basically, there's, you know, little way to know who's behind these trusts, who benefits from these trusts. And that discretion was an incredible draw, particularly for foreign clients.
If I was thinking about banks, I might think, well, so what if a state passes a law? There's federal bank regulations that, at least in theory, should be watching for the source of money coming into these banks. We're not talking about banks, though, right? How are trusts regulated differently than a bank might be?
Yeah. So both banks and trusts are not allowed to knowingly take on a client looking to shelter assets from crimes, right? That's money laundering. And so that law applies to both banks and trust companies. But since 9/11, the federal government has really focused on big banks, right? They want to make sure that terrorists and drug traffickers and other enemies of the U.S. are not sheltering their assets, are not breaching the American financial system through banks. And that's really where the government has focused. There has not been as much attention to the thriving trust industry in places like South Dakota, Nevada, New Hampshire, and other states. They just kind of flew under the radar for a long, long time, and we'll see if that changes.
Talking to Debbie Senzipur with the Washington Post and Northwestern's Journalism School, looking at the Pandora Papers, a treasure trove of documents showing how trusts are being used in new and different ways to help shelter wealth for people around the country, around the world. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Debbie, this trove of papers, we're calling the Pandora Papers, we could spend all day talking about what's in it. What were some of the big things in these documents that gave you and your colleagues so much to work with here?
Yeah, I mean, we've partnered with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists. They are this nonprofit media outlet that obtained 11.9 million secret financial documents and shared them with 600 or so journalists around the world. And we found more than 300 political leaders that had set up offshore accounts, some prominent celebrities who had set up offshore accounts. I was most interested in the impact in the US. And I was particularly interested in the people who are hurt by this, because when I went into this as a journalist, I just thought, oh, you know, it's the rich doing what the rich, you know, this is what people who are wealthy do potentially. They try to find the best places to manage their wealth and to avoid paying taxes. But this is not a victimless situation. And what we found is that a number of people in the US moved money offshore while they were being investigated for crimes or while they were facing costly civil lawsuits by people who claim they were hurt from, you know, different people here. And so it's not a victimless crime. And I really wanted to bring that out in our reporting. There are people who are actually hurt by this system.
I want to dig into a couple of those. One example you and your colleagues give in a piece was, and I think this is one of the American-based trust companies. Somebody, a wealthy woman, had parked a lot of her money in one of these trusts. And when her former husband, who had custody of children, came looking for child support he was owed, the trust sheltered that money, right?
That's exactly right. And it was a wrenching example in the story. It was the daughter of an oil heiress who had reportedly about $8 million in trust in California and moved her assets to South Dakota because, as I said earlier, you can't breach the trust to get at someone's assets, even if you have a legitimate claim. And this dad, who's raising two teenagers, had an order for child support from a California court. Because his ex-wife had her assets in trust in South Dakota, he could not breach this trust. And in fact, the South Dakota Supreme Court affirmed that in an opinion, saying, these are our laws. This is the way our system is set up.
You also dug into a story of a sugar producer in Central America, I believe it was. Can you tell us some about that? You have an interactive display about that in the Dominican Republic.
Yes. Isn't it interesting? I mean, 2,300 miles away from Sioux Falls is this very, very poor community in the Dominican Republic. It's a community of people who work, you know, in the sugar industry, cutting sugarcane for 12 hours a day for a few US dollars a day. And what we found through the Pandora Papers records is that the former president of this company, a company that had been accused for many years of human rights and labor abuses, that this former president, who then went on to become the elected vice president of the Dominican Republic, had shares in this company and an other personal wealth that amounted to about $14 million. After he died in 2014, his family finalized the several trusts in South Dakota, including shares of this troubled sugarcane company in the Dominican Republic.
What does that mean then for the people you talk to in the Dominican Republic, the families who had been working for this company, in some cases displaced by this company?
Yeah, you know, they wouldn't have known it because these are top secret transactions. And so these are very, very poor families who work for a few dollars a day. They live in company housing, often without electricity and running water. It's, as you can imagine, it's grueling work under a hot sun for hours and hours and hours a day. And so the question becomes, you know, and I don't know the answer to this. I would leave it to your listeners and to others, but does the United States want to shelter the assets, want to shelter money, in this case, company shares, of a company that has been accused for a number of years of labor abuses and human rights abuses? Is that something that we stand for here in the United States? And I'll leave that to others to answer that question.
We're talking to Debbie Sensiper. She's an investigative reporter at the Washington Post, associate professor at Northwestern School of Journalism, part of an international team of journalists reporting on millions of secret financial records being called the Pandora Papers. We're looking at these trust laws in the United States and how they've been used, especially in a handful of states, including nearest to us, South Dakota. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have questions about these Pandora Papers, have you been following this story? Coming up, we'll look at some calls for changes in regulations coming in Congress. Do you want to see laws changed? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and questions, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at the Pandora Papers, a set of millions of documents that gives us a look at how the U.S. trust industry helps wealthy people and world leaders hide their money and property in secret. Focusing on the U.S. part of it, the wider papers are global in scope. Debbie Sensiper stays with us. She reported on the Pandora Papers for The Washington Post alongside a group of international investigative journalists. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions about how all of this works, your thoughts, and if you think there needs to be a change in U.S. regulations. Call 800-642-1234. And Debbie, following up on this, you have seen some calls for changes from Congress. What kind of things are people talking about?
Yes, last week, in the wake of the revelations in the Pandora Papers, a bipartisan group of lawmakers in the House got together and proposed what would be one of the most, if not the most significant change to anti-money laundering rules in the United States since 9/11, essentially requiring trust companies and other types of professionals, real estate agents and art dealers and others, to better investigate potential clients to make sure that the assets that are coming into the United States aren't tainted, aren't suspect. So that would be a pretty significant change in U.S. law should that be approved.
What have state leaders in these states with these laws said about why they changed them? Is there an economic benefit for the states involved?
Yeah, I get that question all the time, and it's a terrific one. And it's important to answer. And that is that, you know, in South Dakota and in places like New Hampshire, the trust industry said, look, this is going to be good for the state because it's going to create clean jobs and it will create fees that will go into the state's treasury, much like banks pay fees, trust companies will pay fees. And I interviewed a lawmaker in South Dakota, and I will never forget this. He said, you know, I wasn't sure about this trust industry, but I want to keep our sons and daughters home in South Dakota, and this will create jobs. And what we found through our reporting is that certainly there was an economic impact, but it was a very limited economic impact. All of those promises didn't quite pan out. And, you know, a lawmaker I spoke to, a different one in South Dakota, said, you know, I fought this industry because I just didn't see any benefit for the people of South Dakota. Are they using, you know, the trust industry that we've set up here? And he was pretty doubtful that they were.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Gary is with us in Brookfield. Gary, hi.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call. Say, what you ought to be asking Debbie and what Debbie ought to be investigating is who the people are who propose these laws to the politicians. Politicians don't think these things up on their own. They aren't smart enough to do that. They have people come to them and say, we want to implement a law that will do this.
Gary, thanks for the call. And Debbie, you did, in fact, investigate it. And it's a couple of guys in a lot of these states, right?
Gary, your question is exactly what my editors asked me many months ago when we started doing this. Who are the architects of the industry? And we spoke to the architects of the industry in New Hampshire and Alaska. And we tried to in South Dakota. And yes, what was interesting is they pressed for this legislation, and then they went out and started their own trust companies. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it was an interesting progression.
And these are just what, trust lawyers who saw an opportunity, but they knew they needed specific state laws to let them go through with it?
Absolutely. They needed to make their states competitive with the global trust industry. That means that they needed to offer, you know, certain customer-friendly provisions like secrecy and discretion. And, you know, the lawmakers in South Dakota overwhelmingly passed these, you know, these changes, these laws, year after year after year, in part because the laws were just incremental and they didn't, you know, it wasn't like, okay, we're going to let all these bad guys in. They just didn't, they had no information about it, or very little information. And so what's interesting is we hear from lawmakers over the years in South Dakota saying, gosh, this is like watching the paint dry. Don't understand what we're doing, but it sounds good to me. So I don't think they were intentionally trying to do something wrong or in any which way. I just think they were listening to some smart people in their state who represented, you know, banks and trusts, and they just went along with this legislation.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Debbie Senziper. She's with the Washington Post, looking at the Pandora Papers, this release of documents about trusts and how they're used to help shelter money for people around the world. Becky joins us next in Houstonford. Becky, hi.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. And I'm so glad that you've moved ahead with talking about the Pandora Papers. I find it fascinating. And I was wondering how it can be that laws can be passed in South Dakota or Alaska or any place else to circumvent federal laws that seem to, well, and the process of moving money from California to South Dakota or from overseas to any state in the United States, when they're circumventing current laws, it seems like it'd be a violation of the interstate clause of the Constitution, of multiple other laws currently in place against sheltering and laundering money gained in, well, questionable is a polite way. In some cases, it sounds like these are outright criminal activities or things that the United States would, at the very least, pressure other countries to look into had it been occurring in those other countries.
Becky, thanks for the call. Debbie, your thoughts on that?
Smart question. The first thing I would say at the outset is that we found no evidence in based on the information we had in the Pandora Papers that there were that U.S. trusts, including the trust companies in South Dakota, were sheltering criminal proceeds. So I should let you know that. We found no evidence that anything illegal was going on, and we found no evidence that the family from the Dominican Republic who moved their assets into South Dakota broke any laws or did anything wrong. So I want to say that at the outset. But the short answer to your question is that the federal laws that regulate the trust industry are rather murky. Federal law generally allows trust companies to decide which clients they want to accept and which clients they want to turn away. So there's really not a lot of specifics on who trust companies should be doing business with. And what financial crime experts say is that trust companies should be turning away not only people who have been accused and convicted of crimes, but people who have faced credible accusations of wrongdoing, that the United States should not be harboring wealth from people who have potentially done some bad things in very vulnerable communities all over the world.
Thanks a lot for that call. Do we have enough transparency, Debbie, unless we have this big document up like we have here? In general, do we have enough transparency on these trusts to know that they aren't breaking laws, that they might be through a holding company or something like that, taking money illegally obtained?
Yeah. So the Pandora Papers leak of documents was unprecedented in size and in scope. If your listeners remember the Panama Papers from 5 years ago, we had information on one provider. We have now information on 14 offshore providers, but it's still just a glimpse. And so all we know is what we know. And because there's so little transparency, you know, we don't know what we don't know.
What are you watching for next as you continue to follow up on what was in these papers and the response from governments around the country?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking, first of all, we have some more stories that we're working on. This was, as I said, this leak of, I mean, you know, journalists are lucky if they get handed a stack of documents that we couldn't get our hands on. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing. We have almost 12 million documents. So there's more work to be done. And yeah, we're looking to, there's already been an incredible global reaction from foreign governments. And we're going to wait and see what else happens, what investigations are announced and what happens in Congress.
And as you mentioned, some of the state legislators who helped pass these things admitted they didn't really get what they were talking about and seemed, like watching paint dry kind of. Do people seem more excited about it right now? Does there seem to be some momentum in tackling these issues?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, again, nobody is saying that there should not be trusts in the United States. Millions and millions of people all over the world use them. It's a question of, is there enough due diligence required on the part of trust companies to be sure that people from outside the United States or people from inside the United States are not sheltering suspect, you know, assets that were potentially accumulated in bad ways? Is there enough due diligence required? Are we sure that there is enough oversight of trust companies to be sure that that's not happening? And I think that's the million-dollar question.
Debbie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Debbie Senzipur. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter for The Washington Post, also with Northwestern University's Journalism School. She was with us today to share her reporting on the Pandora Papers and what they tell us about how the U.S. trust industry helps some of the world's richest people hide their assets.